In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I don't love junior mints. I just don't hate them. I don't understand why they are treated like second-class candy.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Oh, there's a, you there's don't a understand why a candy that is basically toothpaste wrapped up in stale chocolate is treated like a second-class candy. All right, I get it. It's a good, valid question.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Is there a time to change? You know, the three teams I've drafted this year, second-class candy is pretty good.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
You know, that reminds me, I should check back on old Sense of Elk and see how that team stacks up going into 2024. Sense of Elk.
Sense?
Well, you'd say them the same way, wouldn't you?
Yeah, right.
There's no sniffing in the sense. It's S-E-N-S-E.
Okay.
Sense. Do you have a sense of elk?
I have a sense, yeah.
That's what I asked you.
You have a sense of an elk.
I have a sense of elk.
You're so dumb, you have the sense of an elk.
No, that wasn't it either. No. There was elk salami at the store, at the deli.
Uh-huh.
And I brought that up. And like, would you like that? And you said, I don't really have a sense of elk.
Oh, right. That's right.
That's what you said.
That is how that came out.
Yeah. Has our guest left?
Yeah, he's gone.
Jonathan Alexander of the Houston Chronicle, who formerly covered the Panthers for the Charlotte Observer. It says on his Twitter bio, Jonathan, this might be your first time on our show. Narrow escape. You ever think about how close, you know, Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, how, you know, parallel universe over there. Maybe you'd be covering Stroud for the Panthers, maybe. But here you are with Houston, and things are very much looking up, it seems.
Yeah, that was definitely a distinct possibility. The Texans had a lot of interest in Bryce Young, and we thought for a brief second that maybe the Panthers had interest in C.J. Stroud, but that quickly turned. And I haven't looked back. I've been enjoying the differences in covering the Panthers and the Texans as of late.
When Carolina made the trade with Chicago to move up for the number one pick, I remember where I was. You might too. I was in a bar in Philadelphia with some friends and saw that. And shortly after that trade was announced, ESPN was on in this bar. And they were showing how the betting markets had moved toward Stroud being the first pick. There was a Josh McCown connection. And, like, you know, these kind of things I tend to believe in, Jonathan. And it seemed like a lot of people in the know thought that was going to mean C.J. Stroud to the Carolina Panthers. Do you know anything about how close that was to really happening? Because it wasn't until, Bulldog, there was a Mortensen report.
Chris Mortensen, right.
The late Chris Mortensen came in. You know, he entered the chat, John, right before the draft. He's like, I think the owner wants Young. And then it went that way.
Yeah. It's my understanding that the Panthers moved up to number one thinking that there was a deal in place with the Bears and the Texans, and they would move down to number two.
Mm-hmm.
And they would take whoever the Texans didn't take. And the Texans did like Bryce Young, and I think if they were picking number one, they probably would have picked Bryce Young at the time. Now, they wouldn't say that now. having said that, things certainly changed. The Texans didn't like the asking price, what the Bears were asking for that pick or to move down one. And they were okay with Stroud. They did enough research on Stroud to know that there wasn't too much of a difference between C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young, their talent levels. And they were fine staying at number two, where they didn't have to give up extra assets, and that's exactly what happened.
Well, a lot of eyeballs on the Texans now, Jonathan, with the success they had pretty much out of nowhere last year, Stroud's phenomenal rookie season, and of course, special interest here in Buffalo with the addition of Stephon Diggs, traded to the Texans by the Bills. What's sort of the ceiling outcome, if you will, for Houston this year? Are you talking Super Bowl there, or is it too soon for that? I mean, Texans were in the second round. Maybe you'd want to do that, but, you know, it's still very early in their on their bell curve, if you will. So, like, how do you think of this team this year?
No, I don't think it's too early to start thinking that. I certainly believe that the Texans are a top five team in the NFL talent-wise. I think the key is really staying healthy. Unfortunately, I think they're still behind the Kansas City Chiefs and maybe even the Baltimore Ravens. I think you can put a great argument for that. So they have to get past those teams. But we all know health determines a lot in this league and how deep teams are. And you got to stay healthy at the right positions. Texans have to stay right healthy at quarterback in particular. That is a super important position for them. And they've built a lot of depth in key areas like wide receiver. You mentioned Stephon Diggs. He was a big pickup for them. Even defensive line, they got Neil Hunter out there on the outside. They built that defense to fit more what D'Amico likes to do. So they should be in a much improved team who has the potential to go to a Super Bowl. But I still think that the Kansas City Chiefs are the top team, and unless they have a major injury, nobody's getting past them.
How do you see Stephon Diggs' role on this team? We know what he's been here very intimately, the number one receiver, target share, production through the roof. I mean, just one of the best receivers in the league for basically 3.25 years, I guess. The last 3 quarters of last season maybe left something to be desired. I might be exaggerating a little, but at this stage, like with what's already there, we know about Tank Dell and Nico Collins. Like, what is Diggs' role, and how comfortable do you think he'll be in a role that might not be the number one guy anymore?
Yeah, I mean, that's been the biggest question. You know, how will he deal with the fact that there are two other receivers who get a lot of the targets? CJ Stroud tends to distribute the ball to a variety of receivers. He's been doing that since his Ohio State days. But I think that also is the reason why they don't have pause, because C.J. Stroud has a knowledge of managing different personalities. I still think Stephon Diggs will probably be the number one targeted player. Now, it may not look as – he probably won't have as much targets as he had in Buffalo, but he'll still have the top targets, and he'll – likely reach over 1,000 yards. I think they'll use him in a variety of different ways all over the field. I mean, he's been playing outside and in the slot. So I think they're going to use Stephon Diggs' strengths to their advantage. They didn't bring him here just to be a role player. They brought him in here to be a feared weapon that he has been for many years in his career with Buffalo and in Minnesota.
John Alexander, Houston Chronicle, our guest on the Western Hotline, Mike Shope and the Bulldog here. So with respect to Diggs, Jonathan, like, it's kind of still a little bit of a mystery here. What went wrong? You see Diggs acting up on the field sometimes, and he likes to play a role, I think, social media and maybe just with the media, where maybe he likes sort of there to be a little bit of mystery about him. But, I mean, the Bills are in the Super Bowl window, right? I mean, so to speak. And he was their number one. His production declined in the second half of the last 2 years. But as Nick Bakay put it with us, my favorite way it's been put on any of our shows here for months, you know, he was on with us a week or two ago, and he's like, what don't we know about what happened for the Bills to eat $31 million of a cap penalty to trade him for a 2025 draft pick? Yikes, right? So what's your version of that? Like, for Houston, it seems like, sure, we'll do that. You know, they've made the trade with Minnesota and had a little bit more draft capital from that. Seems kind of obvious, even with a team that has the receivers the Texans do. Does it make sense to you and what you've learned from the Texan side of that trade that the Bills made it?
Yeah, I mean, you look at at Stephon Diggs. I mean, Stephon Diggs, we talked to him, and he felt like they were that the Buffalo Bills had gotten away from him in utilizing him at the offense. And obviously, his usage had decreased significantly over the second half of the season. So, you know, I was reading a few articles when Stephon Diggs got traded in the Athletic, and there were some suggestions that the Bills wanted to show that they could do it without him. I think Stephon Diggs is such a big personality that it maybe coincided with Josh Allen. I look at something similar back watch a lot of Carolina Panthers, and Steve Smith was still a great player, but they shipped him out of there because his personality was too big for Cam Newton, and they wanted it to be Cam Newton's team. So maybe it's possible that Stephon Diggs maybe overshadowed Josh Allen a little bit. I know Stephon Diggs has been really battling hard in every press conference or on social media to show that he thinks he's a good teammate. And I know he's highlighted a lot of teammates who have said great things about him. He feels he's misunderstood, that he's a passionate player, and they probably use that as a reason to, the blow-ups that he's had with Josh Allen, the public, to make a trade for him. So, I don't know that we'll ever get a fully straight answer. I think it's a combination of things, though.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier in the course of this conversation that additions on defense maybe allow them to do more of what the head coach DeMeco Ryans wants to do. What is that side of the ball looking like, and what's the calling card of a DeMeco Ryans defense at this point?
Yeah, I think DeMeco Ryans, he wants his defenses to attack and really get after the quarterback. When he was in San Francisco, they were known for their defensive lines with Nick Bosa and Eric Armstead and other players. He wants to build an elite front seven here, and he's brought guys in, like Aziz Al-Shaair, linebacker. Danielle Hunter, I mentioned, and mm-hmm. Will Anderson in year two. That's a prototypical guy that DeMeco wants in the system, and Will Anderson looks really good in training camp. So they want to really get after the quarterback, force offenses to make mistakes and play super fast so they can force turnovers. And they got guys like Derek Stingley, who had 5 interceptions last year, and Jalen Petrie, who had 5 interceptions during his rookie year. And they hope that guys like that can make plays for them. But they want to get after the quarterback and force turnovers.
We'll get back to this year's team here, I'm sure, John. But you tweeted earlier today about how the Texans announced they had sold out the season tickets for this year. And I wonder if you could shed some perspective on just like how far away from that they actually got with the Watson saga. And, you know, you had the team go from the team that beat the Bills in the 19 playoffs and go to take a pretty big lead in Kansas City. And then all of that, you know, to put it one not so appropriate way, drama and the decline there before you got to Stroud. What was it like in Houston? What was sort of fan interest or fan sentiment about the team through what happened with Watson until they sort of seems to have come out the other side?
Yeah, that's a great question. That 2019 season, before last year, was the last time they had made the playoffs, and ever since then it had gone downhill from there. They had fired 3 consecutive coaches in back-to-back-to-back years. Fans had stopped attending games. They needed a new message. They needed new leadership. The salary cap or their cap space had gotten out of control. Everything had gone wrong for this team, and the fans saw no hope. So they stopped attending. And then they hired DeMeco Ryans, who kind of changed the culture of this program. And Nick Caserio certainly helped in clearing that cap space and kind of starting fresh. But really, DeMeco was the catalyst for it all, and giving a franchise that had lost hope. He was their former player and their former team captain, and he had been remembered fondly. And then they drafted the guy, C.J. Stroud, and Will Anderson right after that. And it just kind of became a team that could compete. And now fans have hope, and now they're coming back in droves. And this was the first time they had sold out a season ticket since 2019. So, you know, they felt like this was a huge accomplishment and a clear message that they're heading in the right path.
It really is something how quickly it turned. It felt like with, you know, this can happen when a story drags on, like the Watson thing did drag on for as long as it did, like that it's just going to take forever to like restabilize the franchise and get everything, you know, get fans back on board, get people, players who want to be there. I mean, how much credit does Ryan's get for that? I mean, you just sort of laid it out there, former player, and like people had a lot of faith in him. It still had to be a really heavy lift. And I mean, it's a remarkable job in 1 year.
Yeah, he deserves a ton of credit. And, you know, he came at the right year. You know, he could have came a year earlier. I think they would have hired him a year before that. But he didn't quite see the path forward. And you know, also credit the Nick Asterio for not spending so much money that they had enough cash space to make certain moves. But really what DeMeco did was change the culture. Like, a lot of players really, like, enjoyed playing for him because he was a former player. He's a motivator. He knows what he's talking about. You know, he has that experience. He's learned under a lot of great guys. He was in that San Francisco system for a long time. So he really instilled that belief, and he knows football. He has a way of doing things, and he's found the right players who really fit his mindset and what he wants to build. And he hit the nail on the head in drafting C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson Jr. Like, those are the perfect two guys for his system in his program and what he wants to build, and I think that's why you see success. It was a perfect marriage all around.
Just a couple of minutes left here with John Alexander of the Houston Chronicle. So what was the Joe Mixon move all about in Houston, where you had Adam Schefter in his, you know, usual way, like, oh, the Bengals are going to release Joe Mixon today, and then there was a update maybe less than an hour later that the Texans actually were trading for him, and then there was a contract extension. Do you have any insight as to like why the Texans felt like they needed to do that? And would you say then, because they did, Jonathan, that this means that Mixon is going to play like a big role? I mean, he seems to be their number one running back. Damian Pierce, that didn't really work out, at least to this point. But to expect the guy to be released, then you trade for him anyway and sign him after that, I don't know. Like, to a lot of us, I think that might not have seemed that that was necessary.
Yeah, I think the Texans, what I know is the Texans really went hard after Saquon Barkley, who ultimately signed with the Philadelphia Eagles for a little bit more money, so they needed a backup plan. And I think they didn't want to miss out. One of their biggest priorities was getting a running game and improving the running game after struggling. Bobby Sloak needs a running game for his offense to fully unlock. A lot of pressure was being put on C.J. Stroud to produce. They didn't want to continue that. And when Joe Mixon, when it was reported that he was going to be released, you know, they decided to make a trade for him. And they only spent a seventh-round pick, but that gave them first dibs on Joe Mixon. No other team, because Joe Mixon obviously would have had his pick of teams that would have wanted his services. But the Texans trading for him, only a seventh-round pick and one pick that they had got from another trade, that allowed them first dibs at him and allowed them, it signaled that they wanted to negotiate a long-term deal, and they got a deal done. But they envisioned Joe Mixon being a big part of their offense, and you know, he has almost 30 touchdowns in the last 3 years rushing. And they need that to help make this offense what Bobby Sloak hopes it to be.
I would think so. So on podcasts I listen to, which are some of which are pretty data-driven, you know, he's PFF Bobby. He's a coordinator. He almost got a head coaching job, it seemed, too, this year. But a lot of credit received for what happened with the Texans. But a lot of these same analysts, John, they really question you when you want to, quote, establish the run. They almost look down on it. So here was Slowick last year with Stroud still leaning a little bit, maybe too run heavy for those people's taste. And the Mixon moves might make someone think that they want to do more of that. You know, just speaking generally, are they going to let Stroud out with those receivers, Collins, Dell, and now Diggs, and even Schultz? Or is it still going to be a team that frustrates fans and analysts who want to see, you know, a team with so much talent in the passing game throw the ball kind of all the time?
Yeah, I just thought that the way Bobby Slowick utilized a run, especially early in the season, I just thought he did it wrong. Like, it became predictable. how he would run the ball. He'd run the ball first down, second down, then throw. And, you know, that becomes predictable. He started to change it up a little bit later in the year, only get on first down, running in on second down, and that really kind of threw some teams off their game. And I think Bobby Slowick is obviously a smart guy. He's the son of a coach. He's learned under Kyle Shanahan, Mike Shanahan as well. I think he'll be prepared. I think they're definitely going to use their passing game to their strength. But they want to be able to run the ball when they want to. You know, they couldn't run the ball at times last year, and I think that contributed to a lot of their struggles. So I think that they'll use the running game to their advantage. I don't think they're over. I don't think they'll become this boring, predictable team. I think they'll still use their passing game to their advantage.
How do you see the division here? Indianapolis kind of had a lost year with their own highly drafted first-round rookie last year in Richardson. Jacksonville's committed to Lawrence, and Peterson is there, but kind of a down year for them last year. And then there's Tennessee remaking themselves. No more Derrick Henry. We'll see if Will Levis can get it done. Like, is it really Houston's, you know, division to lose here, you think? Or how do you see the AFC South?
Yeah, I think Houston's the better team of all the teams in the AFC South. What would give me pause is the Texans' schedule. They have an extremely tough schedule. However, you know, I don't think the Colts got a ton better. They brought a lot of their guys back, and perhaps that helps. But I think they could have added more. I think Tennessee got a little bit better. I don't think the Jaguars got much better. In fact, I think the Jaguars probably got a little bit worse. So I think you'll have, like, a lot of average teams in the AFC South, and the Texans, who should be a very good team if they can remain healthy. I think they just got to get past their schedule. But I do think it's the Texans' division to lose.
Jonathan Alexander, Houston Chronicle. Jonathan, we kept you for quite a long time. Nice to connect with you. Thanks for your time today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. John Alexander. I went back and forth. I didn't know if you preferred John or Jonathan. The last guest we had on, maybe you weren't here, and I asked him right away, what do you like to be called? He's like, I don't care. So, okay.
All right.
I forget who that was, but, like, you know, okay, that's fine. You don't have to have a preference.
Is it Paul?
It was Paul Hamilton. That's right. What is Paul short for?
Paulie.
Paulie. Bone. For some reason, it's short for bone in this case. 803-0550, the Texans, how big a threat? Let us know if you have a take on that. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.